right, it is that time of the week again. My favorite time of the week. Time where I get to sit down with a little bit of whiskey, a microphone, and talk absolute nonsense while drinking whiskey. It doesn't get better than that, people. It really doesn't get better than that. While the beautiful Cocaine Sunrise by my good friend Nick Bossy plays in the background as it fades out. You can buy Portraits by Nick Bossy, available everywhere right now. Or you can stream it, I guess. People don't buy CDs anymore. People just stream stuff. So you can stream it. And that will help out Nick. And you can stream it on Spotify and Apple Music. One thing you can buy, though, is some merch, baby. Buy some merch from my merch store in my Instagram bio. Shameless plug to start the episode. We're 118 episodes in, and you know what? I don't usually plug stuff, but go buy some mother trucking merch, all right? Go buy some merch. It's just the logo. I'm actually, a little insider news, and this just started today. I record this Tuesday, April 18th. It's 8:05 p.m., and I had an idea for some merch, some new merch that I think would be sick, and I hit up my artist, the guy who helps me with the drawings and the compositions and everything, and I said, hey, man, this is my idea. Get it done. And he said, yes, sir. And I said, thanks. So that might be happening soon, and if those shirts come out the way I envision them coming out, they're going to be sick. But nevertheless, shameless plugs aside, welcome to episode 118 of Who Gives a Dram. I am your host, Connor. If you are joining the show for the first time, thank you. If you are returning to the show and listening, again, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here in Who Gives a Dram Studios. I'm looking at my Alex Ross painting that's hanging up on the wall, just camera left. And actually, so one thing I've wanted to do for a bit now is not be on my phone for about a half hour before I go to bed. And I wanted to start reading books more, because I think reading books makes you smarter. I think learning things makes you smarter. Whether they're things that you want to learn or not, I think absorbing more material in any state, whether it's a book or a documentary or a movie, I think the more you consume, the more of a sponge you are, the more successful you will be in whatever venture you're trying to be successful in. Even if that thing you're absorbing has nothing to do with what you're trying to be successful at. The book I'm reading right now is titled Kingdom Come, and I forgot who the author is, but it's essentially a Superman book. It's a book about set in the DC universe, and it's a great novel that I read the graphic novel. The graphic novel is great, but I wanted to read the novel, the real novel. So that's what I'm reading before bed right now, and I love it. But that's not going to make me a better podcaster, you know? Not directly. I'm not reading a book about whiskey to learn more about whiskey. But you can learn more. You can learn larger vocabulary. You can improve your vernacular. And that's always going to help in every instance of life. But who cares? That's not what I want to talk about. One thing that helps me in my day job, because I am in sales, is I did start the TV show Succession. And I just want to say that I apologize to those that have been telling me to watch the show for a while and I've just ignored them. And I've said, no thanks, I don't have the time, I don't want to start a new show and be invested and all this stuff. I'm busy. I got stuff I got to do. I watch Succession when I'm doing my cardio and when I get up in the morning, when I'm drinking my coffee. And Let me tell you, it's a great show. And I'm on episode 3 of season 1. And my favorite character so far is definitely Roman, who is actually Macaulay Culkin's brother in real life. Didn't realize that. And it's a fantastic show. It's a really, really good show, and it shows the way the family, just in the first 3 episodes, the way you can tell that the family backstabs each other is brutal, coming from someone who's close to their family. But at the same time, the way they come together, and for example, Roman slaps his sister in episode 2 pretty hard, and then they kind of get into a tussle. But then 2 minutes later, they're kind of just being brother and sister again. And that's the kind of, that's like true, real family shit. Like, if I would never slap my sister, but I would hit Kale, my brother, and I guarantee we tussled, and then like 5 minutes later, as long as it wasn't about something like serious, like if Kale killed the guy, then obviously that changes things. But if we were just play fighting and then we both got kind of mad, or we were just fighting about something stupid and we got upset, like 5 minutes later, it's back to normal because we're family and we love each other. And that's the vibe that I get from the kids in the show Succession right now, to a larger extent, because they're in a family business and they're billionaires and there's a lot of money on the line. And from what I can tell, there's going to be a lot of backstabbing within the Roy family. And I'm very excited to see how the show plays out, because I do know what happens in this season. It was spoiled to me online what happens this season. I won't say it, but I know what happened. So I kind of know where the show's going, or at least I know something's not going to happen until season 4. And which made season 1, like the first and second episodes, not that dramatic, because I already knew what they were teasing happening wasn't going to happen. And that's very vague of me to say, but I can't say because I don't want to spoil the show. It's on HBO Max. I would recommend it if you are looking for a new show to start. But let's get into the whiskey before I go off, because I do have a few things I want to give my highly valued opinions on. Last week, we did Larceny Barrel Proof C921. I said I had one more Larceny Barrel Proof that I haven't done yet, and we're going to do it today. And who knows, maybe at the end, we'll have a little surprise. But you'll have to stay tuned for that. The final Larceny Barrel Proof that I have, that I own in my possession, that I have not consumed yet on this podcast, is Larceny Barrel Proof Batch B522. So we are going from Larceny Barrel Proof C921 to B522. We're skipping over A122 because I don't have it. And we're going right into this bottle, which is clocking in at 123.8 proof, which is about a proof point higher than the C921 that we did last week. We're going to taste through this, we're going to give it some time, and then we're going to revisit it at the end of the podcast and give it a score. I want to open it now because I'm thirsty. I would like a beverage. Real corks, by the way, Larceny uses. I forgot to mention that last time, so shout out to Larceny for that. Just enough to wet the gums. I'm not going to really go into the history behind Larceny because we've talked about it before. I did an episode on Larceny Small Batch probably about a year ago. If you want to hear the history behind Larceny, I talk about it in that episode. We talked a little bit about Larceny last week. I just want to get into the whiskey this week. I want to dive into this weeded barrel proof expression that came out last May. And I found this particular bottle in where did I find it? I found it in Boston. Of all places, I found it in Boston. Actually, on my birthday last year, me and Kale and Kale's girlfriend Miranda went up to Boston to see a Red Sox versus Orioles game. As you know, if you're a listener of this podcast, a very good friend of mine, Ryan Fuller, is the hitting coach for the Baltimore Orioles. He got me and my brother and Miranda 3 tickets, also 3 on-field passes before the game, and we had a great time. We stayed overnight in Boston, and then we left the next day, took the train home. On the way to the train station, Kale and I wanted to stop in a liquor store that we found, and they were selling this Larceny Barrel Proof on the shelf for $70 or maybe $75 in the heart of Boston, which I couldn't believe. I would figure that Boston was 2 or 3 times MSRP, but only $10 above, maybe $15, is a steal. And anytime I find Larceny Barrel Proof on the shelf for a reasonable price, especially if I don't have that batch, I will buy it. So that's where I found this bottle, and that's when I cracked this. I believe I cracked it the night I got back from Boston. So this has been open for about 7 months now. It's had plenty of time to air out, so I want to dive right into what we're going to taste here and compare it in a way to last week. The previous Larceny we did, C921, I got a lot of frosting notes, maple, a little bit of perfume on the nose, and some like fruit cake frosting is how I explained it on the show, on the palate. So I want to see how this stacks up. It's a proof point higher. Let's see. Give it a little sniff here. And again, that frosting really comes out. That's interesting. A lot of frosting. Not as much of like the mapleness or the perfumeness. I get almost like a little bit more mint right now. Maybe a little bit more cinnamon. It smells a little hotter than the C921. It definitely smells a bit spicier in a way. The nose is great. It smells like it's going to hurt my mouth. Like, it smells like this is going to smack me in the face. But you would expect that from a 123 proof, barrel proof bourbon, especially a weeded bourbon. I would say this is just as sweet as C921, but definitely a bit more spicy, a bit more nuanced. I feel like there's a little bit more going on in this, in the nose. There's definitely a healthy amount of complexity going on. Definitely very unique in the fact of how sweet this smells, but also that underlying spice of that underlying cinnamon spice that you get to. Let's drink it. I want to drink it. So cheers. Episode 118 of Who Gives a Dram. This week, we are drinking to the season finale of The Mandalorian, which is taking place tonight when this episode drops. Technically, it's tomorrow night for me. Or 3 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. 12 p.m. or 12 a.m. Eastern Pacific Standard Time if you're on the West Coast. And if you're an international listener, I have no idea. Whatever 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time is for you on Wednesday, April 19th, that's the time that the Mandalorian season finale is coming out, which we will get into here in a minute. Let's take a sippy boo. A bit oakier and a bit spicier, like I imagined it would be on the palate. Right off the jump, I think I like this one a little bit more, but we'll have to wait and see. Stay tuned to the end of the episode. But right immediately, I get less of a frosting, more of a cinnamon sugar. There is a little bit of maple left, but a lot more oak on this one. Now, as a reminder, for those, if you did not listen to last week's episode, which if you didn't, which do, this is a blend of 6 to 8 year old weeded bourbon. So it's not young, but it's not extremely old. I wouldn't expect to have a lot of for this to have a whole lot of barrel influence to it, but this B522 definitely has more of a barrel influence than the C921 had. This has got a bit more of a heavyweight kick to it. This is a bit deeper. This is a bit stronger. It's got a little bit more pizzazz to it, I believe. And if I'm going to halt on trying to compare this to last week's whiskey, because this is its own whiskey and it deserves to have its own pedestal. This has a lot of oak and cinnamon on it. There is a bit of a frosting-esque sweetness, kind of artificial sweetness there, but it's almost like a cinnamon, vanilla, sugar frosting type of, almost if like Cinnamon Toast Crunch had a frosting that they would put on a cake. That's kind of what this tastes like. Yeah. And that oak is definitely a bit more present. It tastes hotter than the C921. This is definitely a hotter whiskey to me. It's very sharp, as I always get with barrel proof wheated bourbons. I feel like this would really open up with a little bit of water. But I'm not going to open it up with a little bit of water. I think that we'll get back to this at the end of the episode. I'm going to keep drinking it, though. And we'll see how our palate acclimates after a little bit of flapping our gums a little bit. I do have a few pointers. And by the way, the episode will be timestamped down below. So if you want to just skip to the end of the episode and listen to the final review and the surprise that's going to happen at the end, be my guest. We have a few topics that I want to start with, or that I want to throw in here. A few just things that happened during this week. Some MMA news, some movie news. But the first thing that I'll start with is, because we already mentioned it, and it's the topic to which we are drinking this week, is the Mandalorian finale. Now, I haven't talked much about the Mandalorian this season. We covered episodes 1 and 2 back when they came out in the beginning of the season, but we haven't really covered an episode by episode basis because I haven't really been watching it consistently. It's been a busy few weeks for me. But this is the finale tonight, or today, or whenever. By the time this episode comes out, it will basically be when the Mandalorian Season 3 finale takes place. And there are a lot of ifs going into this episode. What ifs? Essentially, let me go into it without spoiling anything first. I want to say that overall as a season, I've been a little bit let down with Season 3 of The Mandalorian. I really liked how it started. I liked how fast-paced it was. Episode 1 and Episode 2 were very quick in moving through the story. And I thought that was good because I thought we were going to get to a larger storyline and kind of halt on that for a little bit. But that never really happened this season. This season kind of just flew by, no pun intended. There was a lot of different things happening, and it felt like, more so than ever, that this season was kind of, every episode was a new bad guy or a new storyline with whoever Mando was fighting at the time, whether it was a dragon or pirates or any other Mandalorians. I mean, it doesn't really matter because every episode had its own kind of antagonist and protagonist that didn't really, it connected with the overarching storyline of season three, but it just felt so separated week to week that it almost took me out of the season a little bit. That being said, I don't want to harp on the negatives. I'd rather describe the positives, which is I thoroughly enjoy the fact that they're back. Okay, I'm going to get into spoilers now. That's how I'm going to put this. Now it's going to be a little bit of spoiler. So if you haven't watched The Mandalorian Season 3 yet, timestamp ahead to the end of this segment. I'll timestamp it below. But I will say that I'm back. I'm glad that they're back on Mandalore. I'm glad. I have really enjoyed the arc of Din Djarin and then Din Djarin and Bo-Katan. Bringing everybody back to Mandalore instead of staying on Nevarro with Apollo Creed. I like how you can tell that something is off with the armor. Something's off with that chick. I don't know if she's going to be the spy for the Empire and for Moff Gideon. Part of me says she is, but part of me, the majority of me says that she's not. I think the pirates or the Mandalorians that they found still on Mandalore, I think they're probably the spies. And I do like how the writers put us, the viewer, into a predicament of we really don't know what's going to happen going into this last episode. Is Din Djarin going to die? I have no idea. You would think not because he's the main character, but the show is titled The Mandalorian. Is he really the main character? Or can any Mandalorian be the Mandalorian? Does it have to be Din Djarin? That being said, Grogu has kind of taken a back seat in this season. He's really not in the center of any storyline. He's just kind of moving along with Din Djarin. Now he does have IG-11's body to use as kind of a way to maneuver quicker. But he doesn't really have an overarching story this season. And I think that Grogu was going to do something big in the last season. I think he's going to save Din Djarin or attempt to save Din Djarin. And by doing that, he's going to, something's going to happen with his ability to use the Force. Either he's going to learn, take a big step forward in learning the Force and being able to control and harness the Force. Maybe he's going to say a few words in this season finale, but I truly and wholeheartedly believe that Grogu is going to come out of his shell a bit in season three, in the season three finale. I think Bo-Katan is probably safe. I don't think she's going to die. I think Moff Gideon is probably safe. I don't think he's going to die. By the way, Moff Gideon's new Beskar armor, I call him the Dark Mandalorian, is the coolest Star Wars armor I've ever seen, ever, hands down. I need him to always wear the mask because that all-black Beskar is frightening. And Moff Gideon, played by Giancarlo Esposito, is a great villain. And although he's only been in one episode so far this season, He steals the scene every time he's in the shot. So, my prediction for the season finale of Mandalorian is it has to be good because this season has been mid, has been super mid. But I don't know if Din Djarin's going to die. I don't know if Boba Fett's going to come help. I don't know if Luke Skywalker or Ahsoka or a Jedi is going to come help in the fight against Moff Gideon and his dark troopers. But I think Grogu is going to almost like metamorphose himself into a a new character, really. Because he is part of Yoda's species, and we don't really know anything about Yoda's species. We don't know what they do. We don't know how they age. We don't know... I read somewhere that Yoda was about 100 years old when he started teaching Jedis and training Jedis. It is confirmed that Grogu is just about 52 years old, which I would assume, the way he's acting, he can't even talk, so I would assume he's like 2, or maybe 1.5 at the most in human years. But I don't know that. I don't know if their maturity and their powers and their... and I don't know if that accelerates. Like, I don't know if he'll jump 20 human years like that. If he sees his dad, Din Djarin, being tortured. I don't know if that will unlock something in him where it kind of forces him to grow. But that would be the coolest thing, I think. And there's a lot of rumors going around that they're going to scramble Din Djarin's brain and make him forget Grogu, which... that would be the meanest thing ever. So, Star Wars, I know by the time this episode comes out, the season 3 finale will have already aired, but don't do that. Don't do that, all right? Don't do that. But yeah, I've enjoyed season 3, but it's definitely the weakest out of the three seasons. Nothing comes close to the season 2 finale with Luke Skywalker. I hope this season 3 finale does, but so far season 3 has been my least favorite season. But that's saying a lot because The Mandalorian is one of my favorite shows. And I do believe that I do trust Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and the people behind The Mandalorian because it is the best Star Wars content coming out right now. They just fell off a little bit this season, but everybody does. It's impossible to keep something, it's almost impossible to keep something good for that long. Kind of switching worlds now. We're going from Star Wars to the MCU. I don't know if you guys have heard about all the things that have happened with Jonathan Majors, but he was basically accused of, I believe it was beating his girlfriend, domestic violence abuse. And it was a very iffy subject for a while. Jonathan Majors released text messages between him and his girlfriend, supposedly showing his innocence, but a lot of people said, like commented on that screenshot that Jonathan Majors' people released for him. And said that it looked like behavior from the woman who kind of just grew to be accustomed to getting beaten in a way, which is a terrible thing to think about and a terrible thing to say, but that's what people online were saying. I've never experienced that type of relationship, so I don't know. All I know is I love Jonathan Majors as Kang. I love Jonathan Majors as an actor. I can't wait. I still haven't seen Creed 3. At this point, I'm just going to wait for it to come out on streaming, but I think he's one of the most talented working actors available right now. And I'm super excited to see him as Kang. However, yesterday it was reported that Jonathan Majors had been dropped by both his talent management agency and his public relations firm, which is definitely not good for him. That's definitely not pointed in the right direction. And it was reported that he was dropped by his longtime manager, quote, due to issues surrounding the actor's personal behavior. Now, that's not good. And that makes you think, oh, so the MCU, here comes a new Kang the Conqueror. Here comes a new Kang the Conqueror. However, it appears Disney and Marvel are... not dropping, or I've not had discussions at all about replacing Kang as, or replacing Jonathan Majors as Kang. And I think that's very strange because if there's someone who's going to try to protect their image over anyone is going to be Disney. This kind of brings me back to the whole Ezra Miller situation where he was just getting arrested every single weekend. Kind of when The Flash was just starting to be promoted and we were starting to get hints as to what the movie was going to be about. Ezra Miller was getting arrested a lot. And DC Studios and WB stuck behind him and decided not to reshoot or recast and kind of just waited out. Now, I don't know what the Ezra Miller situation is now, but I know that people don't really talk about it that much anymore. So this Jonathan Majors situation reminds me a lot of that. And especially the fact that Disney and the MCU haven't dropped him yet. Listen, I hope this is false. I hope nothing happened, and I hope Jonathan Majors is not a domestic abuser. I hope he doesn't hit women. That's disgusting, and probably the lowest thing a man can do is put his hands on a woman. But if he did, and if it comes out that he actually did, and Disney and the MCU kind of just stuck their heads in the sand on this one, that's not a good look either. So I'm surprised, because I would think Disney would play the safe route, even if they don't know what happened, and just kind of part ways with Jonathan Majors. But they haven't done it yet, and I suppose there's been zero talk behind doing that. So listen, I hope it's not true. I really hope it's not true. I'm really excited. The one thing that gets me excited about the MCU right now is Jonathan Majors playing Kang. That's one of the only things that I am looking forward to. Because they kind of decimated the character in Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. They kind of ruined the character. But I still have hope because it's Jonathan Majors and he's so talented. However, if he's a woman beater, you can't keep him on. So, I hope that's not true. I really hope that's not true. There hasn't been any proof. I mean, Jonathan Majors is innocent until proven guilty. That's how it is in this country. Although, a lot of times it seems like it's the opposite. You're guilty until proven innocent, especially nowadays. But he is innocent until proven guilty. So, whatever comes of this, I hope it's all false. But we'll see what happens with it. Yeah. Sad stuff, man. Talking about beating women. I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the Mario movie real quick. How about that? Super Mario movie nears 700 million global haul, which I think at this point it is past that. Super Mario, I gotta reference this article real quick because the numbers are outstanding. The Super Mario Bros. Movie scored the best second weekend ever for an animated movie in North American theaters with $87 million in ticket sales, according to studio estimates Sunday. That was changed, I think, to 92 million at the end of the day Sunday. I could be wrong. The family-friendly Universal release dropped a slim 41% from its record-making opening weekend. With $94 million from international showings, Mario's global total now stands at a staggering $678 million, surpassing Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania in 2 weeks to become the biggest film of 2023. That is insane. For most blockbusters, second weekends are usually down by about 60%, making Mario's 41% drop especially noteworthy. According to ComScore, only a handful of films that opened over 100 million have had less of a fall, including Shrek 2, Frozen 2, 2002's Spider-Man movie starring Tobey Maguire, The Force Awakens, and 2016's The Jungle Book. It didn't really face any competition this weekend. Renfield came out, and it's not getting blasted by critics, but it's not doing fantastic. I've talked about Renfield on this podcast. I really want to see that movie. The Pope's Exorcist, starring Russell Crowe, also came out this weekend. I believe that finished at number 3. I want to say John Wick 4 is still the second. No, I'm sorry. The Pope's Exorcist finished 2nd this weekend with 9.2 million. John Wick Chapter 4 finished 3rd with 7.9 million. And Renfield finished 4th with 7.8 million. And rounding out the top 5 was Ben Affleck's Air Jordan, Michael Jordan's movie called Air. It made 7.7 million in its 2nd weekend. Box office numbers always intrigue me because you never know. Like, I knew, you can tell when a movie's going to flop or when a movie's going to do well, for the most part. I knew Mario was going to make money. But at the same time, like, you didn't think it was going to be the biggest animated movie ever. I mean, it was trending to be cool. Jack Black playing Bowser is amazing, but, like, you don't think that. Just, like, the whole Top Gun Maverick box office story of watching that just continue to make money was amazing last summer. I loved watching and following along with Top Gun Maverick. The same thing with Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man No Way Home, Avatar 2. It's just fun to watch those all-time blockbusters dominate the box office. I've always loved watching box office numbers. I think they're really fun. So, the Mario movie is basically it has one of the best second weekend drops ever. It's the biggest animated movie ever. Jack Black plays Bowser. And everything is good in the world. So, that was a fun story to read on Twitter on Monday, seeing just how successful Mario is. And I'm definitely going to watch that movie. Don't get me wrong. Just like I watched Puss in Boots 2, The Last Wish, I will be watching Mario, the Super Mario Bros. Movie. Yeah, I guess we can kind of stray away from movies real quick. There's two important fight news stories that dropped this weekend. The first one is Max Holloway, the number one ranked featherweight in the world behind the champion Alexander Volkanovski and the interim champion Yair Rodriguez, who Max Holloway beat, by the way. But that's neither here nor there. Max Holloway defeated Arnold Allen this weekend in the main event at UFC Kansas City, defeated him by unanimous decision. And although I did not watch the fight because I was not home Saturday, I started wondering if Max Holloway is what Max Holloway is right now. And I'm hoping maybe you guys can help me understand exactly what Max Holloway is. Because Max Holloway is not going to get another title shot while Volkanovski's champion. Max Holloway is going to have to beat another fighter, maybe even two more wins, to even be considered for Volk's championship. You just can't. They fought 3 times in the UFC, and Volk won all 3 times. No matter how close the second fight was, everybody only remembers the absolute beating he put on Max Holloway in their 3rd fight. So there's not really that much of a storyline there when Max Holloway is 0-3 against the current champion in the UFC. It was different with Alex Pereira and Adesanya because Izzy was just 0-1 against Pereira in the UFC. Yes, he was 0-2 in kickboxing, but that was A, years ago, and B, not in the same sport. So, Izzy fighting Pereira. And the only reason the 0-3 narrative for Izzy was even pushed because it was true. But at face value, you see, oh, he's 0-3. But if you dive deep even just a little bit, if you turn just one page after seeing that headline, you'll understand that, oh, he was 0-1 in the UFC. So kickboxing and the UFC are completely different entities. But Max Holloway is 0-3 against Volk in the UFC, so he's not going to get a title shot again anytime soon. So what is Max Holloway now? What does he do? Where does he go? He called out the Korean Zombie and said that Holloway's an OG. The Korean Zombie's an OG. That's someone I never got to fight. I'd love to fight him. Of course, Korean Zombie said, yeah, let's do it. Is Max Holloway just an insanely talented gatekeeper now? Like, is he going to become the guy where he's kind of like the final boss before the final boss of the champion? Because nothing's going to happen while Volk is holding the belt. So is Holloway going to just kind of keep that number one spot until someone beats him? Is he going to keep the number one spot warm until someone beats him? This is all assuming that Volkanovski beats Yair Rodriguez, by the way, in July, when they're going to fight. I think he gets it done, but I'm pretty confident that Volkanovski can beat Yair Rodriguez. But if Yair Rodriguez beats Volkanovski, then you have Max Holloway waiting right there, and then you'll have Volkanovski. You know, you'll have a division. You'll have three very good top contenders. But chances are Volkanovski is going to beat Yair Rodriguez. And the chances are that Max Holloway is just going to be the number one guy. That's all he's going to be. He's not going to be the champion. As long as Volkanovski has anything to say about it, he's just going to be holding. He's going to be keeping that number one contender seat warm until Volk loses or Holloway loses. So, unfortunately, I think that's where we're at with Holloway. But that means Holloway is always, because you know Holloway's not going to turn out a fight. Holloway's always going to fight studs, and he's going to put it all on the line for us, the viewer. And he's going to have some very entertaining fights coming up. There's no such thing as a boring Max Holloway fight. So, but he did beat Arnold Allen, who was, you know, I think just not on the level of Holloway. Arnold Allen is good, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's on that tier one of Volkanovski, Rodriguez, Holloway, Ortega. Like, I don't think he's on that level yet. Doesn't mean he can't be soon, but I think he's tier two. I don't think he's tier one. I think he's tier two. That being said, an interesting fight is to revisit Holloway versus Ortega, assuming Ortega's shoulder is going to be completely healed sometime soon, maybe this year. That's an interesting fight to revisit. If you remember, they fought at the end of 2018, and Holloway beat the shit out of Ortega. Beat him bad. Beat him by doctor stoppage in the fifth round. They had to call off the fight. So that was 6 years ago. So there's a lot of time that's passed since then, and who knows? Maybe Holloway would be down to do that again. I definitely would watch it again, and I'm pretty sure Ortega would take that fight again. So maybe that's a way that they go, but I can't imagine they book Holloway versus Volkanovski when Volk beats Yair Rodriguez this summer. Also, huge fight news, a fight that should have been made months ago, Nate Diaz versus Jake Paul this August in Dallas, 8 rounds professional boxing match. I'll break down the fight a bit more as we get closer, because that's going to be a must-buy. And the initial reaction I had when that fight was announced, and I'm not going to pick a winner right now. I'm not even going to say how I think the fight will go. I'll give you my initial reaction that I had when the fight was announced. The initial reaction I had was, it's about time. This was the logical fight to make. I think this fight should have been made before the Tommy Fury fight was ever made. This fight would be so much more intriguing if Jake Paul was still an undefeated professional boxer, but now he's not. We've seen his true colors, which are not bad. I always give Jake Paul praise. I do think he is a talented amateur boxer. Nate Diaz is up there in age. He's a mega superstar in the fighting world. And what we're getting now, and the reason why I think this fight can do over a million pay-per-view buys, is because you have two ends of the spectrum here. You have Jake Paul, who is a beast on social media. He knows exactly how to retain an audience for a short amount of time using Instagram, using TikTok, using Twitter, using YouTube Shorts, using whatever he has on the internet side. Jake Paul can advertise his fight and reach the maximum amount of people that one person can reach. I mean, his reach on social media is humongous. I will say that he is fantastic on social media. Nate Diaz, not so much. Nate Diaz doesn't really do social media, but what Nate Diaz is, what Jake Paul is not, Nate Diaz is a bona fide pay-per-view star. Anything, any fight that Nate Diaz is on, he's moving pay-per-views. And the reason he's moving pay-per-views is because he's an OG in the fight game. Fight fans know that when they watch Nate Diaz, they're going to get a fight. So they're willing to spend their hard-earned money, as in myself, I'm willing to spend my hard-earned money on a Nate Diaz fight because I know I'm going to be entertained. Whether win, lose, or draw, or doctor stoppage, in the case of Jorge Masvidal, he is going to put on an entertaining fight. So people are going to dish out money to watch him. Jake Paul grabbing in the social media aspect and building the base that this pay-per-view will be set on, and Nate Diaz bringing in all of his fans, casual and hardcore fight fans, I really do think this does over a million pay-per-view buys. I really do. It's set at $60, which does not surprise me a bit. I think that this is a $60 fight. I hope they put a banger as the co-main event. I hope they can put Amanda Serrano as the co-main before she fights Katie Taylor in Ireland. Unless Katie Taylor is already good to go, then wait. But it'd be fun to have a good boxing fight. Kind of like how we did on the Fury versus Paul card with Badu Jack. It'd be fun to have a really, like, a high-stakes professional boxing match co-maining this, what is going to be a spectacle. I mean, there's no other way to put it. This is Nate Diaz's first professional boxing fight. This is Jake Paul's, what, seventh or eighth, something around those lines. And without going into, like, the breakdown of how I think the fight will go, I think this is going to be the second or third biggest fight of the year, depending on how Izzy versus Pereira 2 did. Because McGregor-Chandler will be the number one fight, assuming that happens this year. But this is probably going to be a second, maybe even a close second. And as much as Jake Paul is great, he needs Nate Diaz to do those numbers. So I'm a fan of the fight. I'm a fan of both guys, and I think it's good business all the way around. And yeah, that's all the news that I have, all the fight news, all the movie news. One fun thing that I did this weekend was I sat outside and had a fire by myself. And I think as I get older, I appreciate the silence more, and I appreciate almost being bored more than I did as when I was younger. And a lot of that has to do with I'm used to being kind of alone. I don't mean that in a sad way. I mean, I literally live alone. So I'm used to, you know, most days, you know, when I get home, I'm the only one here. So I'm used to kind of that solitude, but it's nice. Like I lit up a cigar. I poured a little bit of High West bourbon that we just did on the podcast a few weeks ago. And I just chilled out. I listened to Morgan Wallen's new album for an hour and a half. Had a fire outside. It was nice out and just chilled and had a great time. So by myself, completely alone. So the second thing that I'm going to drink to today as we close out this episode, as we continue to sip on this whiskey, is I'm going to drink to doing things on your own, doing things solo. And that is my homework to you guys, the listener, this week. Especially if you're listening at 51 minutes in, thank you, first of all. But also, go grab lunch alone. Go grab dinner alone. Go to a movie alone. Go on a walk alone. I mean, go to the beach alone. I don't know, do something alone because it feels amazing. So that's what this second round of whiskey drinking is going to be dedicated to, doing stuff alone. And as a special surprise this week, because we're coming off the heels of a Larceny Barrel Proof pour last week, I am going to be bringing in last week's pour, and we're going to compare them right now, and I'm going to tell you which one's better. So, this is Larceny Barrel Proof C921. And I'm going to see which one is better. So, what I'm going to do is... Actually, I can't blind them because I'm by myself. Let's just go into it then. So we have B522, C921, if you're watching this on YouTube. Just to remind myself about B522, a bit oakier on the nose, like I said. There's a bit more spice to it, a bit more heat to it. Definitely a bit of a stronger pour if I had to say. Let's revisit C921. And see how they compare. And right off the bat, there's that like artificial frosting that I remember so wholeheartedly. Like that cake funfetti frosting. A little bit of maple, only because I'm thinking about it, but what comes through on the C921 is like frosting. It's crazy. Compared to the B522, the C921 is much lighter. They're actually very different pours. It's much lighter. It's not as spicy. And it's a bit sweeter. I got to give my palate a second to readjust. All right, B522. Yeah, it just smells spicier, smells more cinnamon, a bit more oak influence. Where the C921 has that, but there's definitely a sweeter undertone to the C921. I still think B522 is a bit more complex. Yeah. The main difference I'm getting on this, on the B522, is the oak and the spice that's present. The main thing is the spice that's present on the palate. Whereas the C921, it definitely has a bit of a sweeter touch to it. Personally, I enjoy the nose of B522 a little bit more than C921, But I think I enjoy the C921 palette a bit more than B522. I think they're both very similar, but if you really try to tell the differences, you can find little nuanced differences in each. I think that they're both right about the same. They're right about the same. They both have great qualities. They both have qualities that I don't particularly care for, but it's not enough to give it a bad score. I think B522 is a solid like 9.1. I don't really remember what I gave C921. I think it was right around the same, but these are just about the same. I do think B522 is a bit more complex. I think there's a bit more going on, and I think that overall, if I had to pick one, I would probably pick B522 just by a hair, but they're basically the same. And what we're going to do now to end the show is we're going to combine the two, and we're going to make our own C921, B522 mix. And this is what's going to be my nightcap to end the night as I get ready for bed. Let's take a sip real quick. Oh, yeah, that's really good because that tastes like a dark frosting. Like, I can taste the first thing I could do was taste the oak, and now I taste that sweet maple frosting a little bit more. That's actually really good. I don't blend bourbons together enough. You know who does that a lot is Paul. He always tells me to, like, if we have a brand on, Bourbon with Friends, and they send us three bottles. At the end, after we've drank through three samples, he pours all of them together and has like a fourth. And I'm like, dude, I'm already kind of buzzed and I got to go to bed. But if you say so, I guess I'll drink more. Yeah, shout out to Paul. Good guy. Good friend of mine. anyways, that's going to do it this week. We're nearing an hour of content for you guys here on your Wednesday. I hope you're enjoying your day. I hope whether you're listening at work or in the car or at the gym or wherever, I truly appreciate you checking out the podcast. If you haven't already, make sure you're following Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok are all at Who Gives a Dram. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure you're subscribed. And also leave a rating and a review if you don't mind. I would greatly appreciate it. If you're listening on Spotify, make sure you follow the podcast and also leave a 5-star review on there as well. That'll help with our Spotify algorithm. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you. And also make sure you're subscribed so you always get my whiskey reviews and the new podcast every single week, as well as leave a comment on the video. And this week, if you're listening this far, comment, if you're listening to the episode this far into this podcast, thank you, but also comment, what is your favorite weeded bourbon? Comment that down below, and if you're listening to this podcast on an audio platform, go on to YouTube, subscribe to the show, and comment under the video what your favorite weeded bourbon is. I want to know what your favorite weeded bourbon is. And maybe if it's something that I have or that I can get, I will go get it and I'll review it and we'll have a good time. So on that note, I'm going to go. Thank you guys so much for checking out the show. Have a fantastic week. Have a great weekend. It's going to be great weather here in New England. So I'll probably get out and do some hooligan shit. But until next week, always remember, whiskey's the water of life, so let's start living.